the J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, a big weekend for derbies. You fancy a glass of 7-Up?
Yeah. Nice of you to reference how many points United are ahead of Liverpool. So thank you for that at the start of the podcast. But yeah, we've got plenty of J-League action that the listeners really want to listen to.
Very good, very good. All right. Well, yes, we'll move on swiftly. And yes, we'll begin this episode by chatting with Alan Gibson about Saturday's Kansai Derby that saw Vissel Kobe take on Gamba Osaka. Then we'll move on to chat about three teams who won for the first time this season in match day three. And after that, we'll wrap up the rest of the match day three fixtures. So, yes, without any further ado, let's throw to our chat with Alan. For the first time in this young season, it's our great pleasure to welcome Alan Gibson from J Soccer Magazine back to the podcast. Alan, how are you?
I'm fine, gentlemen. And yes, happy new season and happy new year.
Fantastic. Alan, we're here. So we can talk about the Kansai Derby on Saturday at Kobe hosting Gamba Osaka. But of course, regular listeners to the pod, all of the J-Talk podcast stable of podcasts will hopefully they're aware that there's a new Kansai club that has entered J3 this year, and you were at their inaugural home match on Sunday. That must have been quite an occasion.
It was great fun. It was a beautiful day, 13-14 degrees, the sun was out. I didn't need my Uniqlo under armor stuff, and Matsumoto Yamaga came along, so they have an amazing away following. So, I mean, even if no Nara fans turned up, it was going to be great. But there was about 4,800 people there in J3 for the opening game, which was excellent. And probably two-thirds of them were Matsumoto Yamaga fans and gave us a great time. And Nara Club played their hearts out and did well. They only lost 2-0 to a penalty kick and then a midfield error, which ended up as a goal, against the team that is probably everyone's favourites to go up. So welcome to J2. Not already. Welcome to J3, Nara Club.
Yes, quite a baptism of fire, I suppose, the hordes of travelling Matsumoto fans. But, personally, for me, I think it's great that they actually got their first game at home. Of course, sometimes the J-League, just the quirks in their scheduling means that, new teams that don't get that honour. So the fact that they were able to open their J3 history at home is a great thing. And so what are the general expectations for Nara in their first season in J3? Hoping to just make up the numbers, or do you think they can acquit themselves pretty well and end up maybe even mid-table?
I think they'll be very happy to survive this time. They need to upgrade the ground a little in some way, and but they do have an amazing new training facility. I met the chairman? Yes, I guess he's the chairman. He was quite a young man, 35 or 40 so, and very enthusiastic and raising money to pay for a training system and trying to get bigger players in. So they have a go-ahead guy at the top. And an open mind, and I think they'll be happy to survive and sort of consolidate, for want of a better word, this year. I don't think they'll be pulling up any trees as Iwaki did, but we shall see.
All right, fantastic. And I'm sure we'll have a full report on Nara Club's J3 debut on J-Talk Short Corner, which, of course, is a part of J-Talk Extra Time. And that will be coming up with Mike Innes later on in the week. So, listen out for that, listeners. All right, then. So, yes, the Kansai Derby was, it's always a huge fixture, of course. And Kobe entered it, Alan, as the host on Saturday as one of only three clubs in J1 who were a perfect two wins from two, and they've ended match day three at top of the pile as the only club left with a perfect record after a 4-0 home win over local rivals Gamba. Where to begin with this one? I guess we begin in just the third minute when a bit of a scuffed effort from Yuya Osako bounced in past a wrong-footed Korsetani to give Kobe a very, very early lead.
Yeah, I think about a minute before that, actually, Osako had made an excellent shot, which had just gone wide. He really hit it well. and it was a sign of things to come. But then, yeah, eventually he beat beat Tanny by completely miskicking the ball for the first goal. But you know, it was a good start. They went on. I mean, could we perhaps start with the referee? And those who didn't see the game, quite incredible refereeing that went on. I'm not sure there was any VAR worthy problems, but they seemed to allow players to kick each other. I was quite surprised that Gamba, in fact, were very physical, as opposed to what I expected, a nice passing game. They were just basically going in the back of everyone. And Djebali, the first Tunisian J-League player in a long time, looks very decent, very physical, but I think he needs to control his physical stuff a little bit. Gotoku Sakai got Djebali's elbow twice in quick succession. But yeah, the referee seemed to be losing control of it by about the fifth minute. But thankfully, nothing went wrong in the end, and we didn't see too many cards, and there were no red cards. So, but I, by halftime, I was a bit worried that we were going to see like 9 against 9 by the end. But it worked out well, and yeah, Vissel Kobe just did what they needed to do, and they finished well, and that was the key. I think they finished excellently and overran Gamba.
All right, so yeah, just the 3 minutes after Osako gave Kobe the lead, Takashi Usami looked to hit back for Gamba, but his 25-yard shot hit the bar on its way over. Then you've mentioned Djebali there, Alan. So, Sam, I was going to mention him. 2 minutes before the break, he headed narrowly wide from a lofted Juan Alano cross. So, yeah, Djebali making his first start. What did you make of him?
Yeah, a bit like, quite like what Alan said, he puts himself about a bit. I quite like the physical nature of it. I think sometimes Japanese teams are not as physical as they should be, and I think when you gaze, this is the sort of game you do that in as well, a derby game. So I wasn't against the physical nature of the way he played, but I thought technically he looked pretty decent. I think he's maybe a little way short of fitness. I think in the next few weeks we might see a little bit more of him. But yeah, he looked pretty decent. There were lots of high hopes from him throughout pre-season. He impressed then. Yeah, he's got a good reputation from across in Europe. So yeah, I liked what I saw of him. He didn't get necessarily too much to do, maybe more in the second half as Kobe really took control of the game. But yeah, pretty decent. It was a surprise call maybe as well to drop Musashi Suzuki, who'd scored last week. And they made a couple of changes, Gamba, which I was a little bit surprised by. I mean, the one was enforced, bringing in Agawa for the injured Kwon, but then they changed the right back, they changed Darwin in midfield, and Djebali came in as well. And I just thought maybe that unsettled them a little bit, because I thought Gamba played quite well in their first two games. They'd got draws in both of them, and he maybe thought he needed to tweak something. But I think, especially with Igara, a young player coming in for his first game, he's enforced, he has to play. I don't think it makes much sense to then change around the back four and the players that are sitting in front of him. I think they lost a lot with Dawan not there. I thought Kobe completely outrun that midfield. And yeah, I thought Igara especially was quite exposed in this game. So yeah, the changes surprised me, and I think he went a little bit overboard with them.
Rightio then. So yeah, that Djebali chance came 2 minutes before the break, and then 2 minutes after the restart, Kobe went 2-0 up when Koya Yuruki's blast was punched away by Tani, and Gotoku Sakai's shot from just outside the box deflected off Keisuke Kurokawa and bounced in, with Tani again wrong-footed. So Alan, yeah, Kobe 2-0 up, and well, Tani couldn't do anything about either of them. So I guess Gamba, in some respects, had hard lines here, where two goals down, but yeah, their keeper had no chance to save either effort. So I don't know, did you feel at that point of the game Kobe's lead was deserved? I mean, we're going to go on to talk about the other two goals they scored, and they were perfectly legitimate and excellent goals in their own right. But yeah, did you feel Gamba a fraction unlucky to be 2-0 down by that point?
They're certainly unlucky in both of the goals, the lucky finish and then the deflection. Tani can't complain about Tani doing anything wrong, although after losing 4 goals to nil, his confidence might be a little bit shook. But we'll talk a bit later of whether Higashiguchi gets another chance soon. But I think that Vissel were playing exactly how they needed to play. Gamba were being a bit... Gamba were being pressured and shocked a little, and therefore they came out a bit more physical than usual. As Sam said, Egawa was sort of thrown in at the deep end, where I think that perhaps a centre-back who actually the manager knows well, Fukuoka, would have probably done better there instead of Egawa. And he soon had a yellow card too, which, you know, must have played on his mind too. In fact, I think he quite easily could have had another yellow later, but luckily didn't. Lavi looks very useful. But as you said, Sam, Dawan was very good in that position. And if they're not going to play two volantes, two defensive midfielders, it looks like they're sort of going for 4-1-2-3 or 4-1-4-1 even. Then I think they really need to have two defensive midfielders a bit more, because one of the midfielders now is Usami, who's sort of dropped back behind the forwards. And Usami is not, you know, known for his defence, although he certainly not in the centre of the park. So Lavi was a bit overrun in his, and of course he's a new player too. So pretty much exactly what Sam said. I think that, you know, there was a bit too many changes. I think that's Gamba's problem, and I think we might come to this again later too, is that they've actually got a lot of players and they've got good cover in almost every position, I think. So maybe the manager is not sure of his best team yet.
All right. So, yeah, as I mentioned, Kobe then went on to score two excellent goals and wrap up this 4-0 victory. Yoshinori Muta, who we mentioned last week, couldn't hit a barn door despite his best efforts and his two assists in last week's win. Well, yes, he got his first goal of the season finally in the 66th minute when he was completely unmarked and powered home a header from Ryo Hatsuse's corner. And then Gamba's derby day misery was complete in the 73rd minute when Sakai played in Muto down the right. Muto's return pass took out four defenders, and with the freedom of the Gamba box, Sakai had time to pick his spot, blasting past Tani at his near post. Echoes of Ryunosuke Kabayama's strike past Tani for Tosu last week. So I don't know, Alan, is Tani going to get a bit of a reputation as a bit soft at his near post here? That's two times in the past two games he's been beaten there. I mean, you know, fierce strikes that are, postage stamp jobs and very hard for any keeper to save, I suppose. But, Gamba supporters already asking the question if Danny Poyatos picked the right keeper or not.
I don't think he's got a problem at his near post as such, because both of those goals you mentioned, I mean, they were absolute blasts into the above the keeper, and he's got to go down. He's got to spread his legs a little bit. So I remember, you know, 20 years ago or so, that England fans were complaining that David Seaman went down too early. But you can't do this. But he was, he was left. Well, as you said, it was an absolutely brilliant passing movement that that freed him. And then last week, Kabayama was like, 50% brilliance and 50% luck, but the blast was superb too. So I don't think Tani's really done anything wrong. And the fact that, as Sam said again, he had two of his defenders in front of him were changed. They've never played together before. Egawa's never played for Gamba before. So I think that the manager has said publicly, although I think it might be sort of mind games and the fact that he's chosen Tani, but the press are asking, you know, is Tani the one for you? And he's saying, well, it's going to be 50-50 every week. I'm going to decide depending on the opposition. So he's sort of left himself open to actually give Higashiguchi a chance without crushing Tani's confidence, perhaps. So I don't think Tani's done anything wrong. I think Gamba, as I said, they're finding their way. They've got plenty of very decent players and, hopefully a manager who can work out the best for them. So personally, I think Higashiguchi is a god. He probably kept Gamba up last year. And I think that this year was the year that Tani would come along and perhaps play in the cup games and a few games now and again. But it's been switched around and it's on its head at the moment. But I don't think that Tani will be too concerned if he's dropped, for want of a better word, or rotated. And I think Gamba will be okay with two excellent goalkeepers this year too. So they just need to work out the balance.
Yeah, and I'll come to Tani's defence as well here. I think he was left so exposed for this fourth goal. Mm. Muto's in down the right. He's cut it back. It's a lovely reverse pass. Lavi is going with Sakai. As soon as Sakai gets there first, Lavi then goes off in the opposite direction. He doesn't bother to track him. So Sakai has a free run to get as close to the goal as possible. And it doesn't matter if it's his near post, far post, or wherever. When you're 2 or 3 yards out and you're just blasting it past the goalkeeper, he's got no chance. And he had no chance from Kabayama's shot last week either. That was past him before he could even realise there was a shot taken. So, yeah, I don't think this scoreline should not be down to Tani. The two deflections expected goals, a free header where no one marks Muto, and then this goal. I mean, he's got, there's nothing he can do about it. It's just whether his confidence takes a shot from this. Hopefully it doesn't, because I'm sure Higashi Gucci is going to play in midweek in the Levain Cup, just give youngsters a chance there with a 36-year-old, but I think he will play. I'm sure he'll be very, very good. And then the pressure does come on Tani. It's just how he deals with it. But I hope that Playatos sticks with him, because, yeah, goalkeepers are 22. They're going to go through these patches, or this one game where you have to bounce back from it, maybe, or he might feel he has to. And I think it'll give him extra confidence if next weekend Tani is again in between the sticks for Gamba.
Yeah, no, fair enough then. All right, so we had a couple of questions on this game from Daniel Hawkins. Maybe he was expecting Johnny Nicol to be on, but of course, Alan, you've got a foot in both camps anyway. So the question on Gamba, Alan, is Daniel appreciates that it's early days, but how worried should Johnny be? How worried should a Gamba supporter be after a result like this? We've just said that the goalkeeper didn't have a chance for the first two goals, and the marking was horrible for the latter two, so perhaps not so much. And we're going to come on to talk about FC Tokyo in a couple of games time, and they were absolutely rank on Saturday themselves, so maybe I could answer Daniel's question about Tokyo at the same time when we get to that game. But this one result out of three, as Sam said, they were decent at worst in their first couple of games. So Poyatos will hopefully just wipe the slate clean and try and forget this one as quickly as possible.
I think so. That will be the sign of a good manager. Personally, I think that Gamba could have or even should have won the first two games, and they looked quite decent. They've started with a good squad, and they, as I said, they have people in every position. And the fact that Dawan looks a very decent Brazilian, unlike quite a few of the Brazilians that we see in the J League now. I mean, he's quite solid and very good at his job. And the fact that they've sort of gone somewhere else now, and they've brought in a Tunisian forward who's played in the World Cup and looks very strong, and as we've discussed, very physical, not afraid to put himself about a bit. I think that he could be quite a shock for some defences in J1 this year. And then Netalavi is a player who, in my opinion, he could have been picked up by one of the big five leagues in Europe for sure. I spoke to him personally. He said he had offers from England, Premier League, or at least interest, shall we say. But he just wanted to come to Japan. Now, you know, they'll say that, won't they? Because they've come to Japan now instead of the Premier League. But he's played in the Champions League, and he's played very well in the Champions League. So I think that if the manager can sort out his best team, they have an excellent, I mean, literally, they probably have 22. They probably have two good teams compared to some. I think Vissel Kobe, in fact, if we can move over there just for a moment. Vissel Kobe are very short of players in certain positions and have at least six or eight youngsters or very inexperienced players as cover. Whereas at Gamba Osaka, we take central midfield, for example. We have Dawan, we have Netalavi, who we already discussed. Then we have Okuno, who played there quite often in the last couple of seasons. Shu Kurata is a very experienced player who could fit in any of the positions in midfield. And then we have Yuki Yamamoto. And Rihito Yamamoto has been signed. I mean, there's like six or seven players fighting for central midfield where they may only use one player if they play this 4-1-4-1 or 4-1-5-2 or whatever they play. That would be 12 players. And then they have, I mean, they've got wingers coming out of their ears too. Ishige can play on the wing. They've got Jiro Nakamura is a fantastic young player. They signed Naohiro Sugiyama. Dai Sukamoto came back from loan, although he didn't play very much over the last year because he's been injured. But the year before, he was playing on the left wing. And Fukuda hasn't played. I could go through every position they have. And of course, we've mentioned the goalkeeper already. They're very fortunate to have two excellent goalkeepers. So I think the problem that Gamba Osaka may have this year is choosing who to play and then keeping the others happy, because they really do have... they've got 20 or 22 players that could play in the first team, I think. So the key is the manager handling the players and the making them into a team, as opposed to a bunch of individuals who play together each week and don't click. So I don't think they have too much to worry about, but hopefully in the next two or three games, they can pull up a win and a draw at least and steady the ship.
Yeah, we have one more question from Daniel, this time on Kobe Allen, and just ask, are Kobe the real deal this season?
I think they are. I went into the game thinking that, you know, with my, I was going to say, I didn't really have a horse in that race, but to be honest, I had both horses in that race, didn't I? And so if I had to choose a horse in that race, I really wanted Vissel Kobe to win it, because I feel that they can do very well this season. The only problem they had, as I've already mentioned, is I think that they're lacking. They certainly don't have 22 first team players like Gamba do. And the fact that they've only conceded one goal in three games and they have maximum points with so many defensive injuries that they have at the moment. They started the season without Kikuchi. He came in last week, last weekend before the derby for about half a game. And then he got injured in the derby, and it's not official, and it's not out there yet. So I'm not sure how much I can say, but it's not good, shall we say. So Kikuchi will be missing for a while. Toulé, the Brazilian forward, who was a Brazilian centre-back who was on loan last year, has signed a full deal this year, and is already out injured. And so Gotoku Sakai missed the last game. Leo Osaki is a centre-back who's actually playing central midfield often. He was injured for the last game as well. So, I mean, they have very little depth in defence, and they're already going to end up next weekend. I'm sure they'll be playing Yuki Honda, who was signed from Kyoto Sanga as basically an experienced backup for all the others. And Yamakawa, who's a right back, who's going to be playing centre back. Considering the fact that they've got so many injuries at the back, and of course even the central midfield, there for me the key man could be Sergi Samper, who's also been out for 8 months, defensive midfield. Thankfully Mitsuki Saito is playing extremely well, and I hope he gets the chance to stay. But if Vissel Kobe can stay injury free, or even, shall we say, less injuries than they've got now, and players like Osako can stay injury free, then I think they have a very good chance of going somewhere. The biggest problem for me I have is that Maekawa in goal, who's played three games and conceded one goal, which was a penalty kick, a dodgy penalty kick in the 95th minute or something 2 weeks back. The manager dropped him regularly last season, could probably hit his confidence a lot. And then this season they've openly been searching all over the world, but basically in Brazil for a goalkeeper, and they've eventually signed their fifth or sixth choice in Felipe Meguiaro, who apparently, I don't really know much about him, but he's played for FC Dallas in America, but he's literally played about 10 games in three seasons. So I don't know how good he is, to be honest, and whether he's there just to push Maekawa to play better, or to be hanging over his head and, you know, knocking his confidence, the fact that they've signed a goalkeeper that nobody really knows about, and must be slightly irritating for Maekawa too. So hopefully they handle it properly, and Maekawa continues to play. They stay a bit more injury-free, and some of the defenders come back. And the kids that they have, they'll need to play, because, as I said, they don't have 22 players like others. But they have some very promising kids, or even some youngsters. Haruya Ide used to play for, well, came from Verdi and originally from Jeff United, I think. Played at Gamba about 3 years ago, but hardly played a game. And I don't think he's played many games in the last two or three seasons because he's been injury prone as well. He seems like a very decent player, but I'm not sure he's a key man. Of course, I haven't mentioned Iniesta. I think the key point is they don't miss Iniesta on the field. And if they can continue to sort of sideline him, for want of a better word, if he's injured or if he's just a 20-minute sub at the end when he's needed, I think that the key is if they don't try and squeeze Iniesta into that midfield, then they'll do a lot better than they are now.
Well, that brings me on to my follow-up question very nicely, Alan, so thank you for that. Yeah, he's been away. I think his wife gave birth, so he's been back in Spain, but they're going to come back. He's going to come back, and you're going to have that problem that Kobe had. Like, first of all, do you fit him in? Where do you fit him in? And how much pressure is there on Kobe, on the manager, to play Iniesta. Obviously, he's on so much money. He's such a high-profile player. You get, you know, sort of advertising, all that sort of thing that comes with Iniesta. How much pressure is there to put him in there? And is there a place in this team for Iniesta? Or do you think it's so much better, well-balanced, with playing the three in midfield that they played this week with that front three? Like, yeah, so what is the situation, do you think, with Iniesta?
I think the key, as I said, is that is not playing him, or certainly not starting him often, but giving him 20 minutes at the end if the game needs to be changed. The key for me, for Wissel in the current lineup, is the central holding midfield player, which Leo Osaki has done quite well there indeed. Mitsugi Saito drops in and out of there as well. And of course, Yamaguchi is also a good defensive holding midfielder. So they've actually got all three midfielders sort of rotating around. And while they might be playing 4-1-2-3 or 4-1-4-1 with Yuruki on the left and Muto on the right, aiming everything at Osako, they've got three midfield players who can play defensively quite well. So the key is that if Iniesta is to be fitted in there, I think he'd have to be taking the place of Muto or Yuruki as opposed to one of those three midfielders. But that won't happen, I think, because those two are quite key to the attack. So I think, ironically, that the manager, it was not a big name, unlike some foreign managers or very experienced managers who certainly the foreign managers might be pressured into playing him. This Yoshida-san is a relatively young manager who's been fired once or relieved of his duties once. He's also been head of the scouting department, and he's been a coach in and out, and he played for Vissel Kobe a while ago too. So as I probably said on the pod like 3 or 4 years ago when he was the coach then, he is the kind of coach that they need. He knows the players know him, they respect him, and he's one of the boys, but he's above them when he needs to be. And I think the key is that he's not Iniesta's pal or anything like that. And I don't think, this is a key, I don't think that he's under the thumb of Mkhitaryan. You know, if Mkhitaryan's happy enough to have Iniesta as part of his club, he uses him in advertisements, he uses his name, they sell shirts around the world, etc. And as long as Mkhitaryan's making enough money back from Iniesta in one way or another, I don't think he'll pressure Yoshida, the manager, to play him. And if Iniesta doesn't play so often, which is, you know, a strange thing to say if you don't know Vissel Kobe so well, or you don't know so much about the J League, and having a superstar in the team, he should play. But no, that's the key. I think often in the past, even way back 20, 25 years ago, having a high profile foreigner in the squad has sometimes messed up various teams just because they had to play them. So the key for me is that Iniesta doesn't play so often, and when he does, I think he needs to take the place of an attacking type player as opposed to midfield defense.
All right then, yeah, definitely one to watch as Iniesta prepares to make his return for Kobe in the next few weeks, we would imagine. But Danny Poyato certainly got some homework to do as he tries to bed in his new 4-1-5-2 formation. And if he can sneak that past the J-League, I think Gumba will do very, very well this season if they're actually allowed to get 13 players on the pitch. So, Alan, it's been terrific to catch up with you. And, I mean, this is just amazing J in a nutshell, isn't it? Kobe, bottom of the table for so much of last season. Begin this season with so many injury problems and, players unavailable, etc., etc. So, naturally, of course, they're the only team who are a perfect 3 wins from 3 after match day 3. That's that's what we love about the J-League, isn't it?
Isn't it great? being a local man and being a Vissel Kobe supporter, for want of a better word, I see their games so often. I see the people around the town getting excited, and I know quite a few of the players. So for me, it's a local thing, and it's a good thing. And they'll get their stick, of course. They're paying Iniesta what $36 million or whatever it is, which, you know, off the field they're making their money back, and that they are becoming such a famous team around the world. I mean, there are the pros and the cons, and there's a lot of pros for it. But you know, if you look at the squad, as I said, I think there's 11 or 12 homegrown players in the 28 or so that they have, which is probably a surprise to many people. Five or six new youngsters and five or six players like Yamakawa, players like that who've, and Maekawa, of course, who've come through from the youth team. So it's not completely buying success, but, you know, the money helps, doesn't it?
Indeed, indeed. And, well, yeah, in a roundabout way, speaking of money, what's happening at J Soccer Towers these days? And is there anything that our listeners should be watching out for in the weeks and months to come?
The demolition of the towers to pay for the next magazine, I think. Okay. Oh, it's as always, it's a labor of love. We got 30, issue 32, I guess. What I'd really like to do in issue 32 is get good access to the Nara Club and FC Osaka as the new J3 boys. We mentioned Nara Club already, of course. FC Osaka, as you mentioned about the home games, actually, FC Osaka have got two away games before they finally have a home game next weekend, depending when you listen to this podcast, of course. So, and I'll be there too, so that'll be good. So I'd like to look at the new clubs. Myself and Matsu, as we call him, Ken Matsushima, is working hard on the website to update it a little bit, because I'm really hoping that jsoccer.com, the actual website, becomes more of a Wikipedia, for want of a better word, and we keep up to date with all the kits and the mascots and the history of the clubs and everything like that. We're working harder on the website than the magazine at the moment to make sure that it stays up to date. Of course, you can get Twitter and Facebook and, you know, instant results and reports anywhere at the touch of a fingertip or a fat thumb. So hopefully the website can just be sort of more of a historical based thing. So please do check out jsoccer.com, people. It's got the history of every club, every shirt, every mascot, anything you want, how to get to the grounds even. So hopefully jsoccer.com revives a bit more and we get some more traffic there. And then another magazine, hopefully, well, I would say June or July would be nice to get all the new kits in the new clubs, maybe. So because the kits, I mean, J-League shirts are a big interest on Twitter. The other account I have, of course, is J-League Shirts. Please check it out if you want to talk about the shirts. So, yeah, hopefully you'll allow me to come on again in a couple of months' time and talk about a new magazine, and hopefully I'll be able to pay for it.
Absolutely, yeah. When Kobe era perfect 15 from 15, yeah, we'll most definitely have you back on, and keep taking the pulse of the current league leaders throughout the season, and of course the other Kansai clubs as well. All right, yeah, always terrific to catch up with you, Alan. Great to hear you had such a good time at the Novo Stadium on Saturday, and indeed at Nara Club on Sunday. Yes, keep loving Amazing Jay, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Thank you for having me on. It was my pleasure.
Thanks again to Alan. And next we'll move on to the three teams who won for the first time in the third round of the season. And we'll begin part two at Komaba. Of course, not Urawa Reds' usual home stadium, but to many, it is their spiritual home. And it was the site of their first 3 points of 2023 after they came from behind to defeat Cerezo Osaka 2-1 before a crowd of over 18,400. So, yes, it was a bit of a retro look from Reds, at least, in terms of the stadium, Sam, and their supporters will be absolutely over the moon to finally have 3 points in the bank.
Yeah, they kind of needed to turn the clock back, didn't they? Because this season has not been great for them so far. But yeah, going back to Komaba, it looked like the atmosphere was great there. They were right behind them, and they produced a better performance, Reds. It wasn't perfect. There were lots of issues along the way. I think some of the finishing was quite poor, but they eventually dragged themselves over the line. And yeah, this could well be the start of their season. But yeah, maybe not so for Cerezo Osaka, who've just, you know, it's not been great, has it, the first three games?
No, they are one of six teams that are still looking for their first victory of the campaign, as are their city rivals, Gumba, as well, for that matter. But yes, Cerezo did take the lead in this game. In the 33rd minute, Matei Jonic's header from midfield found Hirotaka Tameda down the left. He was allowed to dribble into the box and fire over a cross, with Ken Iwao unable to sort his feet out, with Satoshi Wejo lurking behind him. Iwao bundled the ball into the net for an own goal. And I mean, this wasn't Wejo scoring it, Sam, but once again, completely nonchalant Wejo, not even bothering to celebrate his side going ahead. I think this is going to be something that I'm just going to keep track of throughout the season, that Wejo just not celebrating Cerezo goals at all. It's miraculous.
Yeah, it's just so calm. That's what happens. The goals happen while he's on the field. So he's very happy about it. It'd be interesting to see what team he does celebrate against. What teams he really hate that he's going to celebrate. So yeah, one to watch, and hopefully for you, it's by FC Tokyo.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, Jonic almost made it to 2-0 6 minutes before the break, but his close-range header from a corner was tipped away by Shusaku Nishikawa. In the 59th minute, Reds got a lifeline when Shinzo Kuroki ran onto a through ball by Hiroki Sakai and was upended in the box by Koji Toriumi, with the referee pointing to the spot. To Alex Schultz sending Kim Jin-hyun the wrong way from 12 yards as Urawa finally notched their first goal of the season, 61 minutes into their third game. And, I'm not sure, Sam, if Kim was familiar with Schultz's penalty record before he stepped over the ball. Schultz, DAZN flashed up the graphic that his previous five penalties had all been sent to the goalkeeper's right. So naturally, Kim dived to his right. But Schultz, yes, I don't know whether he gave him the eyes or not, but he just simply slotted home to Kim's left. So, upsetting the form book there a little bit, Schultz. But, this was a goal that Reds had to have. And, they ended up with all 3 points as a large result of it.
Yeah, it was desperately needed, because in open play they were struggling to get anything on target. They'd had a fair number of chances, mostly to Koizumi, but yeah, off target most of the time. Moberg slashed one wide, and there was no real composure in their finishing. But yeah, getting a penalty, Schultz is usually very good from the spot. I don't think he's missed yet, and I don't think, that graphic said he hadn't missed yet. So yeah, it was always kind of confident if he's going up. But it was just good play from Kuroki. It was just someone going in behind, kind of dragging the defence away. It caused an error, and I think he helped, because he started this game over Linson. I think it'd be great if he was 10 years younger and he could do it for 90 minutes every game. But yeah, he was able to take the defence one way, frees up some space for those attacking midfielders in behind, because Linson was just adding to the crowd there and they weren't really being able to create anything. But yeah, Kuroki opened up that space. And this was vital they got the goal. It gave them a bit of confidence, because, most of the chances were just going begging. And considering they conceded the own goal the way they did and the way they were missing chances, they really needed something to perk them up, because it looked like another one of those days for Reds until this penalty.
Yep, in the 65th minute, that Leo Ciara thought he'd put the Cerezo back on top with a close-range finish, only for VAR to disallow the goal for offside. And I don't know, Sam, maybe the linesman thought the ball had deflected off a Reds player, because it looked pretty clear along the line that Ciara was offside, but he wasn't flagged initially, was he? But, I'm not sure if the linesman was, and not 100% sure about who had sent the ball over, or whether it had taken a significant deflection or not, because, as I say, he did look offside. And, I mean, I'm notorious for thinking people are level, but even I thought Ciara was offside on the replay. But anyway, the goal was correctly disallowed. And then with the 10 minutes left, Reds made a late push for a winner. Atsuki Ito's first time shot hit the outside of Kim's right hand post after Linson miscontrolled. But 2 minutes later, Kaito Yasui's terrific right footed strike from the edge of the box won it for Reds to send their fans home from their spiritual home happy. And deepen the early season concerns for Cerezo. Ciara is certainly taking his time to bed in, although he did look threatening for periods of this game. So I'm sure we don't have to worry too much about him. He will score goals for Cerezo. We've obviously seen Wejo already score a worldie this season. But their supporters will be slightly concerned that they're still winless after 3 games.
Yeah, I think so. And Ciara got loads of chances at Marinos. They're at a premium more so at Cerezo, and yeah, he's not got enough of it. I don't think. He was a little unlucky here to be offside, although I think he's looking down the line of the 6-yard box, so he probably could have timed his run a bit better. I think he hit the bar as well very early on, and it was a kind of nonchalant effort from 25 yards and then somehow hit the crossbar. But yeah, I don't think he's getting quite as many chances as he would have liked. I don't think there's enough quality necessarily from especially Tameda down that left-hand side. I think with him out, and then you're missing Kiyotake as well, who is, yeah, a very good creative player. Harakawa was missing in this one as well. So I think maybe creatively they're just struggling a little bit. They've had to chop and change a little bit in defence, which isn't helping in that respect either. So, yeah, it's a little unsettled at the moment, Cerezo. But, I mean, there is still so much quality in that team. You expect them to, yeah, pull away from it here. I think they were quite good against Niigata, and we've seen how good Niigata were in that first game. And that second one against Avispa was just, yeah, you shouldn't lose to Avispa. So, yeah, that was poor. This wasn't great either. So, slight concerns, but, yeah, it's still three games into the season. I'm sure they'll sort themselves out a little bit. But, yeah, they just need to find a little bit more quality getting into Leo Sierra. They've still got Cappy Shaba, who we haven't seen anything of yet. I think he's still working his way towards fitness, but if they can get him in, maybe he can add a little bit of that on that one side. So, yeah, it's a work in progress at the moment, Cerezo. But, yeah, I think you've got to give credit to Reds. I thought they were a lot better in this game than they have been in previous ones. There was a lot more impetus going forward. They put Cerezo under pressure. And, yeah, it's a really good goal to win it from Keito Yasui, a young player who's just stepped up and added that quality that they really needed.
Right, and yeah, work in progress is definitely a moniker you could apply to Reds as well. But yeah, hopefully for Maciej Skorża, the first victory monkey is now off his back, and yeah, hopefully his players will be able to play with a bit more freedom and confidence now, and yeah, things might start to click sooner rather than later for them now that their first 3 points of the season are on the board. So yes, a successful return to Komaba for Reds on Saturday, and I think they play there once or twice more this season, so they're sure to be great atmospheres again, no doubt about that. And well, yeah, isn't Karma a BITCH, Sam? Naturally, the team I tipped to finish bottom in my J-Pred defeated the team I support at the first time of asking this season, 2-0 at the Sanga Stadium, and I can't really have too many complaints at all as an FC Tokyo supporter. I described their performance as rank in part one with Alan, and it was really, really poor. I wouldn't want to take anything away from Kyoto, though, and I hope my comments in the line group straight after the result didn't do that. I said congrats to Kyoto. Tokyo were abject, but yeah, Kyoto fully deserved their victory, and I hope it didn't come across as I was suggesting anything other than that. Chokwijay shuffled his pack up front again and handed new signing Kosuke Kinoshita his first start alongside Patrick, with the pair combining for Kinoshita to nonchalantly backheel Patrick's square ball past Jakub Slovic in just the fifth minute, only for VAR to call the referee over for a look at the monitor after Fuki Yamada took out Kashif Bangunagande out by the touchline, the goal disallowed for the foul. So, Sam, I mean, as a Tokyo supporter, I was obviously relieved to see this decision finally reached. Did you think it was the right one ultimately?
Yeah, it was a correct call. I think it was quite a clear foul by Yamada, but it was a good start from Kyoto. It was real intensity at the start of the game that we haven't necessarily seen in the first two matches, and I thought the link-up from Patrick and Kinoshita for this goal was just a sign of things to come. I think, yeah, he's shuffled his pack around a lot to try and find the right combination up front, and I think he's set on two here with Kinoshita and Patrick. I thought, yeah, they both looked really good. They both caused a lot of problems for Tokyo. This was a fine finish, even if it didn't count. So, yeah, it was a really promising start and a really worrying. It should have been a warning for Tokyo that they got away with one here. But, yeah, as you say, they were pretty dreadful for the entirety of the game. There was no real response. And it was just it just gave Kyoto more confidence. And I thought, yeah, they played exceptionally well in this game.
Yep. Yeah, can't argue with that. Around the 20th minute, we saw big chances for Brazilian forwards at both ends. First, a Dailton curled inches over the bar for the visitors, and then Patrick forced a remarkable low save from Slovic, the big pole tipping Patrick's low drive onto the post. Just past the hour, the Tokyo substitute Kota Tawara Tsumida's low cross found its way to Adailton at the back post, but he scuffed wastefully wide. And then with 15 minutes left, the Tokyo defense failed to clear it from a Kyoto free kick. Kinoshita crossed from the left, and the Sanga captain Sota Kawasaki rose at the back post above Keigo Higashi to head back across Slovic and into the net for 1-0. So for Kyoto, it was a slightly longer wait than Reds for their first league goal of the season, 75 minutes into their third game. But Kawasaki, a terrific header, and he celebrated. You could see all of the Sanga support, as well as the players obviously wrapped to finally score that first league goal. And the second came from Patrick from the spot late on after Higashi tripped Kosuke Shirai right on the edge of the box. And this was a bad day at the office for Tokyo, no question about that. And just like Gamba, I hope that Tokyo can put it behind them in match day four and, from the Levain Cup in midweek onwards, I guess. But, I think I'm done talking about Tokyo. Feel free to share some more praise for Kyoto, Sam, because it was a good performance. I mean, they didn't pull up too many trees, but they didn't have to. And, they were ultimately very, very comfortable winners.
Yeah, I thought they were. Tokyo were restricted to very little. I thought going forward they were a little bit, there was a lack of spark, but I think defensively Kyoto had tightened up quite a bit. And I thought their forward play was very good. The goal for Kawasaki, I think it's really good from him. He peels off the back of Higashi, then gets the run on him. I think there's very little that Higashi then can do in that position once he's not followed the run from Kawasaki. So, very good header there. And, good desire as well to get in for the penalty. Shirai steals in from Higashi again, maybe a lack of awareness from him. And I think it's quite a clear foul and a penalty. And, really well taken from Patrick. So, I just think there was a change in mentality, a switch up here, a little bit more of Kyoto going out to try and win a game rather than maybe trying to sit in as they had done in the first two games. So I liked that. I thought they played well against a team that didn't really turn up, and it's a slightly worrying performance for Tokyo, but really good. Great for them to get off the mark. You really need to do that, especially when you're a team like Kyoto who are expected to struggle all season. This should be a good confidence booster. So really good for them. Hopefully they can continue that going on for the rest of the season, because, you don't want to just have one good result and then not follow it up. So, good for Kyoto and Tokyo. Work to do. But again, it's just one game. They've looked better in the previous two. They should have won the first two games. So maybe just one of those days for Tokyo, they can kick on next week or even in the Levain Cup.
Yes, indeed. So, football definitely swings and roundabouts aplenty. But, amongst the two teams I support, I guess I'm a plus five in goal difference for the weekend. So, overall, a success, even though Tokyo were very, very poor. Also, the third team to taste victory for the first time in this new J1 season on Saturday was Sagan Tosu. They hosted the previously perfect Nagoya Grampus at the real estate agent in front of the stadium. Stadium, and this for a large part, Sam, was a tale of the two goalkeepers, Mitch Langerak for the visitors and Park Il-gyu, extremely busy throughout. And for me, the pick of the saves was a Langerak tipping Naoyuki Fujita's 25-yard pile driver onto the bar 2 minutes before the break. But there were terrific saves from both keepers, and it looked like it was going to end goalless until a terrific glancing header, which has been the theme of this early season. It's one I can get right behind, from Yuichi Naganuma with just 7 minutes to go.
Yeah, it was a clever goal, actually. A little short corner, it freed up, it kind of knocked Nagoya out of their rhythm defensively, because they're very well set usually. But it came out, it allowed Naganuma just to get a little bit of space at the near post, and a perfect ball into him and a good header, and there was nothing that Langerak could do about this one, because absolutely, the goalkeepers were both fantastic in this game. I agree with you, the save from Fujita was the best of the bunch, but generally everything that both of them did were really good, very good saves. I think Park especially was very good coming off his line, and that Nagai is quick and he's going to run in behind, but Park was off and out to him very nicely, and made good saves whenever needed. So terrific goal keeping very little between these two sides. But yeah, again, it's one toast to get their first victory, a good confidence booster for them. And yeah, I think a draw would have been fairer, I think, on the balance of play. But yeah, just one moment of quality is enough. And yeah, great for them, great for their supporters. And yeah, it's, I think it's just good looking at the table. Nobody has had like a complete disaster of a start. There have been positives in general for every team so far, so I'm quite happy about that. And yeah, it's just shapes up for a really exciting season, I think, as we called it at the start of the year. And I don't think there is a great deal necessarily between a lot of teams in this league. Everyone can beat anyone on their day, as they say. And yeah, this is a good result for Tosu.
Yes, indeed. Of course, returning to the scene of the crime, their opening day battering at the hands of Shaunan Belmare. And yes, they've righted their ship, I hopefully made amends with the home supporters after, as we said, finally tasting their first victory of the season. A terrific goal from Naganuma to win it. Just quickly, Sam, the Nagoya front three, was there any more signs of them gelling here? I know Junker had a near miss 20 minutes after the break. It looked easier to score from about 2 yards out, but he couldn't keep Shinosuke Nakatani's drive across the box down, instead firing over. Nagai and Mateus. Mateus yet to score. I did warn Tosu and their supporters that he might be due, so fair play to them for keeping him out for another week. Did we see any further signs of this front three gelling?
I think Junker and Nagai have developed a fair understanding. I think they've worked quite well together. There was one where Junker, I think, picked up on halfway, dribbled past a couple of players and then played in Nagai, and was one of those that Park came out and saved pretty well. So they combined last week as well. And Mateus is maybe the odd one out, and he's kind of like, it's like Cristiano syndrome. He's just shooting from range, and that seems to be what he's doing at the moment. It might be the lack of goals that he's got, and he's just trying to create something. But I haven't seen necessarily the link up between him and Junker and the guy that I was particularly expecting. I still think the front three in general are quite isolated from their midfield, who don't get the ball to them very well. They kind of have to win it themselves to create chances, rather than having the midfield really set them up too often. They're feeding off scraps as a trio at the moment. But yeah, there's something coming in Junker and Nagai, but yeah, they need to work Mateus into it a little bit more, because at the moment, yeah, he's kind of just playing, I don't know if he's playing for himself or what. It just seems to be that if he gets the ball, he's going to try and do it himself, rather than realizing he's got players that he can work with. And that partnership hasn't really materialized yet.
Okay, fair enough then. So they are the three first-time winners from match day three. We will take another quick break and talk about the other two teams to win in this match day, and then wrap up the episode with the three draws. Welcome back. Next, let's head to Mitsuzawa, which was the host to two games in this J1 match day. Yokohama FC, the game we'll chat about now, hosting Kashima on Saturday. Well, it was the stadium was also used for a Friday night football, with the Yokohama F Marinos hosting Hiroshima, that we'll come on to a little bit later. A fine finish from Tomoya Fuji past Kengo Nagai gave visiting Antlers a ninth minute lead, but Yokohama FC equalized from the spot through Koki Ogawa 15 minutes later, after Toa Yamane was caught from behind by Koki Anzai after he burst into the box to receive a return pass from Tatsuya Hasegawa. That's it now. Three goals in the past two games for Ogawa, Sam, but the penalty did look a little bit harsh to me on Anzai. I mean, there was slight contact, but Yamane appeared to go to ground a fraction too easily for me.
Yeah, it did go down easily, but I think because the referee gives it, there is contact. He'd got in behind. I don't think it was ever going to be overturned. It was maybe a slightly harsh one, but yeah, I just think maybe Yamane earned it just going in behind there, and it's a little bit clumsy from Anzai. So I didn't have any great problems with it, but I can understand completely why Kashima would be slightly disappointed to have conceded it.
Yes, and just for a change, there are players certainly complained vociferously to the referee, but this, no, of course, that's something that we're accustomed to from Antlers players over the years. But anyway, they shook off that disappointment and retook the lead 7 minutes before the break. A long ball over the top, finding Keigo Tsunemoto on the right side of the box as he was being pulled to the floor. I mean, if a goal hadn't have been eventually scored, I'm sure Antlers probably would have been given a penalty. Anyway, Tsunemoto squared for Yuma Suzuki to tap in, or at least that's according to the J-League. Other outlets have this down as an Induka Boniface own goal. I mean, it was it was bang bang, Sam. We're not really sure, but it did look to me on the replay that Boniface knocked the ball in as he slid in. But Suzuki won't be giving back his goal bonus, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely not. And I wouldn't want to try and take it off him either. I don't think he'd take it too well. I think, yeah, it's a difficult one to call maybe live, but I think it is an own goal. But yeah, in J League terms, this is as clear a goal as you'll see from Yuma Suzuki.
Indeed. 10 minutes after the break, Fuji thought he'd given Antlers breathing space with his second of the afternoon after he gave Nagai the eyes and finished at the near post after a Yuta Higuchi cross was deflected out to him on the left, only for VAR to spot Higuchi a hair offside when Suzuki headed on a long ball forward. Yokohama FC almost made the most of that reprieve, and Hasegawa's eyes lit up when he was teed up from 9 yards with only the keeper to beat by Ogawa with 15 minutes left, only for Naomichi Ueda to make a brilliant recovery block and preserve Kashima's lead. Diego Pichuca grazed the outside of Nagai's right-hand post in the final minute of the 90, and Antlers finally wrapped up the points in the 6th minute of stoppage time when Arthur Kaike's shot hit Nagai's left-hand post, hit the keeper's back, and went in. The J-League's farcical own goal ruling rearing its ugly head again. Kaike credited with the goal according to the official body, even though anywhere else in the world that's a Nagai Ogi. I mean, listeners might be tired of me talking about this, Sam, but until, you know, we've got to keep saying it until they finally change it, because some of these are just absolutely ridiculous. And there's another one we're going to come on to in the Niigata Sapporo game. But anyway, Antlers have run out 3-1 victors here. Yeah, 2 own goals, depending who you listen to. But how much did they actually deserve this win at the end of the day?
Or just own goals. Who did they give? Which Shonan player did they give Wada's own goal to last week? Because that would be fantastic. But they tried to take that away from him. But yeah, just in this game, I thought Kashima were very good. They were easily the better team in this one. They controlled it. They saw a weakness in the left-hand side of the Yokohama defence and exploited it time and time again. And I mean, it's a real worry now for Yokohama. Gabriel, their main defender, is out with an ACL injury. I think that might be his season done. So he was missing. The aforementioned Wada, he was also out. Maybe embarrassment, maybe injury, I'm not really sure. But both were missing, and it was so easy for Kashima every time. Fuji just had a field day down that side. Tsunemoto also going beyond him, and it was just so simple to get him behind. They didn't play with any sort. It wasn't like expansive football or anything from Kashima. It was direct, and it was effective. And they took them apart a couple of times down that side. The penalty equaliser was completely against the run of play, and just Kashima looked really good. And Yuma Suzuki, I thought, was fantastic again in this game. He's a bit of a knob. I think we can safely say that, but he's a very good knob. And when he's on your team, he was magnificent. I think he pulled the defence away. It was so difficult. They couldn't get anywhere near him. His movement was just so good. It created space for others. And they just looked good. Even the offside that was given, I mean, they put that line up, and I'm still not convinced it was offside. It looked like it was dead level. So they could have had another goal there. So, As much as it pains me to praise a Daikiwa Masasai, I thought they played really well. And Yokohama, I think there's a lot of concern for how they defended here and how they're going to be able to cope without Gabriel for the rest of the season, because this was their first outing without him, and it looked a real mess.
All right then. So I think it's safe to say you're not completely sold on Antlers just yet in terms of the quality of the two teams they've beaten. But, I mean, they do sit third as one of three teams with the two wins and one loss to their name after match day three. So again, it's through gritted teeth that you have to praise an Iwamasa team, I know, but on the balance of this game, deserved winners. And I guess they've made probably a better start than you'd expected they would have done.
Yeah, well, the fixture list, I think, has been kind to them. They've picked, they've got Kyoto and in their first three games, Kyoto and Yokohama, who we both had as our bottom two in our J-bread. Conveniently for Kashima, they've got Avispa in the next game, who were in my bottom three. I think they're in your bottom three as well. So it's been kind for them. And it's not necessarily, I don't think we can necessarily judge them on these games, because they played Kawasaki, they scored early, then didn't really do a lot, and then capitulated against 10 men. So it's still, yeah, still, I'm yet to be convinced by them. I think in this game they were really good. You could only beat what's in front of them, and they absolutely did that. So they deserve a lot of credit for that. But I don't think they've necessarily come through a test yet. I think we might have to wait until the 18th. They go away to Yokohama F. Marinos, and then we'll see what Kashima are really about. Because, yeah, they beat a poor Yokohama side here, so... I have to give them credit. They played really well, but I'm still, yeah, jury's still out for me.
Right. Fair enough then. And lovely. You've teed me up for a nice segue there. Kashima's next opponents are Avispa Fukuoka, who also have two wins and one loss to their name, as do Nagoya, by the by. And Fukuoka are between Antlers and Grampus after match day three, behind Antlers on goal difference, but ahead of Nagoya on goals scored after a 1-0 home win over Kashiwa. Yeah, made it two straight victories for Avispa. And Sam, their supporters won't care, but if a smash and grab is possible at your own stadium, then it appears to me that's exactly what they've done to Raisol on Saturday. I mean, Lukian's won it for them with a lovely finish in the 87th minute, but after Raisol had spurned a host of chances or seen Fukuoka keeper Takumi Nagaishi equal to their ones on target, the visiting keeper Masato Sasaki has raced out of his area to meet a long ball on the right. He's completely misjudged the bounce, and instead of playing the ball out of play, he's presented it basically on a plate to Lukian, who's sauntered forward and drove home through the keeper's legs. I mean, you've had a lot to say already this season about Sasaki and the Raisol defence. I mean, you validated again.
Yeah, absolute rubbish. I mean, what is he doing? Yeah, I mean, he just comes out, and there's not necessarily any need for him to come out because he's going down the wing. But then he's got there. How has he missed it? I don't know what he's done. It's dreadful. And then even when he gets back, he doesn't get... It's quite easy for Lukian to then kind of saunter in on goal. So it was just really poor from Kashima. And yeah, that's going to be an issue all season, because they're all dreadful back there. Generally, I think Koga's okay, but the rest of it is really poor. But their problem now is they're not scoring goals. They're not really, against Tokyo, with all the attacking players they have, they didn't create too many chances. Here they create chances, but they were really poor finishing. I mean, Hosoya dragged a number of efforts wide. I think Savio was maybe better. He had a couple of shots on target. But yeah, I don't think Nagaishi was absolutely tested, like really stretched at all. And if they're not going to be able to score with the amount of possession they have, there's always going to be an error at the back. It's always going to come. And I think this season they need to be winning games 3-2, because otherwise, they're just going to concede. And in this fashion, it was just such a poor goal to concede. It's just, absolutely dreadful. I don't want to be too harsh on him. He's only 20, I know that, and he's not working with a lot ahead of him. But yeah, it's just absolutely woeful, absolutely woeful.
Yeah, I mean, the zone highlights made a point of showing Sasaki coming out of his box to head a few balls clear throughout the course of the game. And I kind of wondered what they were getting at and why they were highlight worthy. But I guess they were trying to, show the fact that Sasaki was wandering out of his box on numerous occasions throughout the game. And, I think on the highlights, it was third time unlucky. I'm not sure how many times in total he ventured out to try and clear the ball. But, at least on the highlights package I saw, it was very much third time unlucky. And Lukian was the grateful recipient. And, the big man, we mentioned he got an assist last week. And here, a first goal of the season. He'll be pleased to find out that, yes, he can score against other teams and not named FC Tokyo in J1. So that was terrific for him. Obviously, a bad news for Raisol, as they are one of six teams still to win this season. But I guess Fukuoka, did they weather a storm here? I think that's probably over-egging it a little bit, isn't it? There were a number of good chances for Raisol, but as you said, Nagaishi wasn't overly tested in terms of shots on target. So I guess a kind of a trademark Fukuoka performance defensively then? They were able to keep their opponent at arm's length, and thankfully for them and, again, their home supporters. As an aside, slightly worrying attendance this game. I think it was just over 6,000 on a perfect early spring afternoon in the sunshine down in Fukuoka. So, yeah, really a low number of spectators in attendance. Hopefully a couple more wins for Fukuoka will get a few more through the gate. But, yeah, I guess as Mr. Hasabe draws them up, this is kind of a typical Fukuoka win, and one that we might have to get used to them enjoying throughout the season.
Yeah, I wonder, because this is typical for Fukuoka, is that what putting fans off? They've seen Avispa try and defend their way through J1 for a couple of seasons now, and maybe they're expecting a little bit more from them. And yeah, maybe the results will get a few fans back. But yeah, it is a really poor attendance for so early in the season against a casual time. You usually expect casual games to be pretty exciting. So that's a disappointing number. But yeah, it was a typical good Avispa defensive display. Maybe they weathered a stiff breeze or something in this one rather than anything else. But when they were stretched, their defenders were very good. I think there was especially, it was a 7th minute or so where Grolly made a really good block from Sento, and that kind of sums up that if they're always in the right place. They were pretty solid again, as you would expect from Avispa. I think they've settled on this back three, which I think for them, I think it's not exciting necessarily, but I think it's almost their three best players in Grolly, Mia and Nara. So getting them all on the pitch, I think it absolutely helps them. And yeah, Kashima really struggled to cut through them. So yeah, a solid display, not an exciting one. But yeah, still at this stage, you'd probably say Avispa are taking any sort of 1-0, however it comes, because yeah, they're one of those teams that you would expect to be fighting in and around that one relegation place. And for them to be on 6 points after three games is almost an ideal start for them.
Yeah, absolutely. They'll be wrapped to have 6 points in the bank this early doors, no question about that. So we'll finish off with the three draws from match day three. And yes, for the third straight match day, three draws in the top flight. That's I'm not sure if that's some sort of record or not, but yes, for fans of quirky statistics like myself, it's yes, an interesting one, no doubt about that. And we'll begin at the Big Swan, where J1 football returned to that terrific stadium in glorious sunshine on Saturday afternoon, and well over 25,000 were on hand for this grand occasion, as Albert X Niigata welcomed Consadole Sapporo to the Big Swan. And we had another one for the J-League own goal files, as visiting Sapporo opened the scoring in the 17th minute. Tsuyoshi Ogashiwa crossed from the right, the ball going back across goal off Ryota Aoki's hip and into the net off Michael Fitzgerald's slide. Aoki's goal, according to the league, a Fitzgerald Oggy everywhere else. And Albert X hit back almost straight away, though, and equalized with a stunning no-nonsense finish from inside the D from Ryotaro Ito. Sapporo keeper Gunsung Jung absolutely flummoxed by Ito's strike through traffic, hit so sweetly with a next to no backlift. And speaking of Ito, Sam, so impressive in this young season so far. Gabrielle Anello asked in our line group whether Ito would be the player of the season so far. He's it's obviously very, very early doors, but he's been impressive in all three of Niigata's games to this point, no question.
Yeah, I had to have a good think about this, because there are good performances everywhere. I think Kobe have had a number of them. Yamaguchi I'd have pretty highly, but yeah, I don't think I can go past Ito. Last week was just one of the best performances I've seen from an individual player in the J-League, bar Mitoma's and all that sort of thing. But yeah, he was fantastic last week. And this one, this goal is so good, because he catches everyone out, because everyone thinks he's going one way to the goalkeeper's left, as it would be. And he cuts it across all the defenders, all the attackers in front of him, across the goalkeeper, arrowed into the bottom corner. It's just such a good finish. And yeah, he just looks the part. He's taken to J1 football so easily. Looks fantastic. And yeah, it was just another great performance from him. Another exciting game with Niigata. I think they are going to be ones to watch throughout this season, whether it goes well or badly for them. It's going to be exciting. And yeah, I think the best bit of this was Sapporo actually came and played, and they were looked really good. I think they were the better team, actually, in this game, Sapporo. So after two abject displays in the last 2 weeks, I think this was a sign of life for them. I think they really needed it. And yeah, it shows what can happen when you put strikers on the pitch, because they actually look like a threat going forward.
Yeah, maybe Sapporo had got their backs up, as Niigata had been so entertaining in the first two match days. Sapporo, of course, known as one of the great entertainers in J1. And yeah, it was great to see them hit some sort of stride at the third time of asking. And it did look a terrific game, this one, no question about that. With Ito's goal lighting it up, no question about that. Then the Niigata keeper, Ryosuke Kojima, was called into action a number of times between Ito's goal and the end of the first half, but then his side hit the front in stoppage time. A free kick into the box, headed on by Soya Fujiwara, and lashed into the net on the half volley by Shusuke Ota. So that's goals in consecutive games for Ota. He's certainly taken to life in Niigata, no question about that. Both teams went close on numerous occasions in the second half. It looked a ding-dong end-to-end affair. Sapporo hit the woodwork twice before their halftime substitute, Yuya Asano, curled in a terrific equaliser off the underside of the bar 11 minutes from time after he played a 1-2 with Takuma Arano. So, well, yeah, if you include the goal, they hit the woodwork three times, and it was third time lucky with Asano's shot going in. In the 90th minute, Daiki Suga bundled in from 6 yards out at the end of a 4-on-2 break, but he couldn't hold his run and was offside when the ball was squared and the spoils were shared. But so from this game, we can take away that, Niigata do appear to be the real deal, Sam. Obviously, the way they played against Hiroshima last week was a perfect indication of that to begin with. But yes, doing the business again in front of their home support. But as you said yourself, great to see Sapporo finally turn up, and hopefully for Misha Petrovic and all of the Sapporo support, this was a sign of things to come from them.
Yeah, I hope so. You don't want a lacklustre Sapporo. You want a really good team to watch at 4 a.m. when everyone else is starting later. So, yeah, I was really happy to see this. I thought Ogashiwa coming back really added something. He's just got so many injury problems. He never really puts a string of games together, but when he does play, he gives that spark to them. And I think he was vital, especially to the first goal. And, it just looked really good. And, it was just a really good open game. I think Niigata just... They're a perfect balance of slightly shaky at the back and really good and expansive going forward, which makes for a great team to watch as a neutral. I don't know, the hearts might be racing a little bit for Niigata supporters throughout the season, but it's really fun to watch. And there's so much quality in that side. I thought first off was maybe slightly better than the second. It kind of got end to end, and they lost Chiba as well at the back. So and Horigome was missing, so it was not their first choice. So I think holes were there that Sapporo were able to exploit, but they just about hang on, and it takes an incredible goal from Asano to break them down for 2-2. And all goals always look better when they flick in off the crossbar.
Yes, no doubt about that. All right, so we'll finish off the match day with the two 1-1 draws that were fought out on Friday Night Football. Mitsuzawa was the host for Yokohama F. Marinos hosting Hiroshima, who I had as the top two in my J-Pred, and different people obviously had either of these teams winning the league. It was interesting to see that with the Obipal Obinna absent, presumably injured. I'm not sure if there's been an update on if he is indeed injured and how long he'll be out for. Loan signing Jun Ichimori from Gamba Osaka came straight into the F. Marinos starting 11 between the sticks, and it's fair to say he had quite a baptism of fire in his F. Marinos debut, Sam.
Oh, goodness me. And some bits of his goalkeeping were pretty good. his distribution was absolutely woeful. I mean, he just passed the ball so consistently to the opposition or out of play. It was just really poor at times. And yeah, it was all over the place because obviously Hiroshima score really early and there's nothing necessarily he can do about that. And Higashi gets the goal. Then he makes a very good save from Khalifa. And then like a couple of minutes after that, I mean, he completely gets caught out by a 45-yard free kick. Almost looks like very embarrassing for him to concede from that distance as it hits the post. And then, yeah, it was just a wild ride just following Ichimori for this game. Yeah, some of the passing out from the back was just so poor. It was like, as you could tell he had a weak training with Ikura because it just kind of looked like Ikura reborn.
Yeah, well, Stuart was saying he thinks that Ikura might go into a coaching role at F. Marinos. Yeah, it looks like he's definitely rubbed off on Ichimori from the outset of his time with the F. Marinos, no doubt about that. And yes, for all fans of goalkeeping comedy, it's such a shame that Makoto Mitsuta's 45-yard free kick, wasn't quite the right side of Ichimori's post because he was very much stranded out by the penalty spot when Mitsuta surprised him with that long drive and it came back off the post and F. Marino's defense were able to clear. It was a very eventful first 10 minutes for the new F. Marino's keeper, but after that F. Marino's weathered the storm somewhat and edged their way into the game. Takuma Nishimura forced a couple of saves from Keisuke Osako, and then the hosts equalized in the 19th minute when Elber won a foot race against a slightly dozy Mitsuta down the left, cut back onto his right foot and crossed into the center where Anderson Lopez improvised a chested finish across Osako and into the net off the keeper's left hand. So, yeah, Osako won't like to see this one back, Sam, because he did get a pretty firm hand to it but was unable to keep it out, although it must be said from very, very close range. Some sort of finish from Lopez. I'm not sure if he works on that at training or not, but, quite a way to chest your side level.
Yeah, fantastic. Great peck work from him. Lovely goal. I think Osako maybe should have done a bit better. But, yeah, again, close range. It's a really good finish from Anderson Lopez. But, yeah, they did get in behind Mitsuta because he was put out to the right wing-back position because Morishima was back fit and then Kawamura was also there. And they've got sometimes they just drop Kawamura into a more central midfield role, but I think they were just a little bit concerned that they maybe had been slightly overrun there, so they played Morishima out wide instead of having all three of them in an attacking position at the same time. And going forward, it worked really well. I thought Mitsuta looked good down that right side, but yeah, going back, he was caught out a little bit. They eventually changed it towards the second half, brought Nakano back on to the right wing back position. So yeah, Marinos did get in behind there and took advantage of that. It's a good ball from Elber and a lovely finish. So at that stage, yeah, they got through that storm and they were looking better, F. Marinos, at this stage. And maybe 1-1 was a fair result after 20 minutes.
Now, as the second half got going, Sam, I think things got a bit chippy, it would be safe to say. And again, in similar fashion to Sasaki racing out of his box a few times for Kashiwa, again, with the highlights package of this game, again, they showed three Hiroshima players back-to-back-to-back going into the referee's book for yellow cards. Again, why would you bother showing those on the highlights package? But I guess it was to kind of demonstrate the fact that things were maybe beginning to boil up under the surface. And then in the 75th minute, it wasn't a Hiroshima play. It was an F. Marinos defender, Katsuya Nagato, who caught the Sanfrecce sub Shuto Nakano as they jumped for a high ball from Osako out by the touchline. The referee initially allowed play to go on after that aerial clash, but was then summoned over for a look at the monitor, after which he sent Nagato off for his high arm. I don't think there was an intent to injure from Nagato, Sam, but maybe, I don't know, what had transpired in the previous 15 to 20 minutes or so, maybe twisted Var's arm and thought that there was more to this than maybe there necessarily was. I mean, he's collected Nakano, but what did you think of the decision to send him off?
Yeah, I think it's harsh. I think he's got eyes only for the ball and he jumps across. Yeah, you have to bring your arms up to jump. And yeah, it does catch Nakano there. I just think it's one of those that maybe looks worse when it's slowed down. So when the VAR has checked it, yeah, he's definitely caught him across the face and it looks maybe worse there. So I can understand to a degree why they've sent him off, but I think it's harsh. I think a yellow card maybe would have been fair because, yeah, it's just he comes from a distance. That probably doesn't help him either. But his eyes are always on the ball. He's definitely going for it. So I think it was a little bit harsh, but maybe the tetchiness of it, of the game up to that point, and it continued for a little bit after that, maybe added to that. I know Marinos were quite disappointed. I think it was only a yellow card for Sotiria, I think it was, for a high boot. And that on another day, yeah, I think those two incidents are quite similar. So I can understand the upset that one's got a red card, one hasn't. But yeah, for me, I thought yellow cards for both situations would have been fair. But yes, I think Nagato was a little unfortunate.
Yeah, fair enough then. And speaking of Sotiriu, he had a couple of chances after F. Marinos were down to 10 men that he'd love to have back, Sam, as he, the chances were there on a plate for him to win it for Hiroshima. And we'll come on to one of the last kicks of the game. Jan Mateus should have won it for the hosts. But yes, Sotiriu, a couple of chances to open his account this season. And yes, he spurned both of them.
Yeah, it was a difficult game for him. I think it was Ryo Nakagawara on Twitter. Yeah, read his stuff, everyone, if you haven't already. But he was mentioning, yes, Sotiriu had his moment in the sun in the Levain Cup final and got his goals there. But otherwise, it's not been great. His return hasn't been great. He hasn't really lived up to the billing yet in a Hiroshima shirt. And there was a golden chance a couple of times in this game to really get going again because he's had a few injury issues. It's been stop-start, but yeah, two really good chances here. He really should have taken at least one of them. And that was just their problem in this game, Hiroshima. They didn't take their chances because I thought they were the better team even before the red card. I thought they had better chances, the better possession. I thought they had more intensity than F. Marinos, who played well in for a few moments, maybe a 10 or 15 minute period here or there. But I thought Hiroshima were the better side. But yeah, no real clinical edge up front. So yeah, that was a difference, I think, there. I think Hiroshima, again, there's another game that's gone by them, another game that maybe on another day they could have won. But yeah, I think the performance itself was pretty decent. But yeah, 2 points out of three games, it's not looking great for us at the moment, is it, Ben?
No, still very early doors, though, mate. But yes, they would certainly love to have more. No, they probably do, on the balance of play, deserve to have more than just 2 points after their first three games. But it has not worked out for them. And yes, they're one of six teams yet to win to this point in the season. F. Marinos, well, I said it, Jan Mateus, he really should have won it right at the death and seen F. Marinos join Kobe 3 wins from 3. But he dawdled over shooting after a delicious back heel from Marcos Jr. into his path, and that allowed the Hiroshima defender Hayato Araki to touch the ball away and into the grateful arms of Osako, and that was about it. So yes, the spoils shared at Mitsuzawa between these two teams that we expect to be title contenders in 2023, and more frustration for Hiroshima to open their season. For the final game of the match day also ended 1-1. It was the Kanagawa Derby at Todoroki between Kawasaki and Shonan. This fixture kicked off Saturday's slate of 8 games, and of course this fixture last season produced the greatest upset in J1 history when then 17th placed Belmare went to Todoroki and stunned the then leaders Frontale 4-0. But yes, we did not get a repeat of that action-packed roller coaster on Saturday. But still plenty of talking points from this game. 5 minutes before the break, the visitors went close to opening the scoring when match day one hat-trick hero Yuki Ohashi was played in by Tariq El-Yanusi, but his shot deflected off Takuma Ominami and onto the roof of the net. Ohashi had to go off injured before halftime after he appeared to twist his knee in that clash, and his replacement, Taiyo Hiraoka, saw a close-range header tipped onto the bar by Junsung Ryong. And Marcinho then headed over from 6 yards out in first half stoppage time. But 20 minutes after the break, Hiraoka drove home a superb strike through traffic after a terrific persistence down the right by the veteran Belmari midfielder Ryota Nagaki. So I guess at that point, Sam, a repeat of the 4-0 was a kind of on, although Sean and I were running out of time by that point. But yeah, it looked like they gave as good as they got again. Belmari, a former Belmari player, Yusuke Sagawa, ultimately made it 1-1. But Seanan, yeah, decent value for their point here.
Oh, without doubt. I think it was not a great game. I think it was one of the worst Kanagawa derbies I've seen, actually. And that's just saying that the rest of them are usually absolute belters. And this was not that. I think there were moments that just before half time it got exciting. But generally it was quite a dull, plodding affair. But Shonan looked pretty decent. They were probably edging it at this point and deserving of the goal. Hiraoka, as soon as he came on, he was involved in everything. That he had that chance that you mentioned. I think he was just generally busy put himself about saying, why was I dropped? I'd started the last two games. I think I'd played quite well. And he made up for that as he came on here. And it was a decent, really good finish, actually, from Shonan. But Kawasaki were just really poor. They had a fair bit of possession, but it was just one of those games where Frontale have, where they have a lot of the ball without ever going anywhere. And defensively, they've still got issues. Jesse L went off with a knee injury and obviously missed most of last season, well, a large part of last season with an ACL injury. They have to hope that it's not the same here, because if they're out without him, without Kurumaya, without Noborizato, I mean, I think I'm next in line to play for Kawasaki at the weekend, so I better get my boots ready. But it's just that it's such a concern at the back there. And going forward, it's just not quite working. Maybe Damian's back in the country. Maybe if you get him there, it's a different option. They can play into him a little bit more, because they have wanted to go long a bit more. But Miyashiro is not really the sort of player that can hold up the play as well as Damian can. So, they need a spark from somewhere. They seem to react to adversity still. They still have that in them. We saw that against Kashima when they went down to 10 men and looked better. They kind of looked better when they went down to 10 men against F. Marinos, and here they looked better once they went 1-0 down. So there's still quality in them. They still have performances in them. They got back into this game fairly well, but it was plodding, I thought, for a lot of the game from Kawasaki.
So slight concerns for them. I mean, they're mid-table in this early season. In the early season standings, with a win, a draw, and a loss after three games. But yes, they certainly haven't hit too many heights thus far, have they? It was a Sagawa, again, a player who I wasn't overly wrapped with after his match day one cameo off the bench. Well, he certainly made me eat my words there with his calm finish past Song Boom-kyun with 10 minutes left. And again, he didn't observe the convention that you don't celebrate against your former club. Giving his new badge a good whacking as he wheeled away in celebration. So I'm sure you're all in favour of that, Sam. And Sagawa will be very happy to get his Frontale account up and running. But so for these two Kanagawa rivals, the points shared, and they move on to the next. And with that game wrapped up, then that is all nine games seen to then from match day three. So before we leave, then a quick look at J1 match day four. And you might have to do some pretty deep digging here, Sam, because there aren't too many standout fixtures on paper, but I know you can always find me a pick of the weekend.
Sam's pick of the weekend.
I'll do my best. It doesn't look great, the greatest on paper. I think Niigata versus Kawasaki and Kobe versus Reds, both on the Saturday, I think those are maybe the two picks. I think Reds, see what they've got, and they've got their first victory under their belts. Have they got the confidence to then go to Kobe, who are absolute tails up after a derby victory? I think that should be a really interesting game. And I think Niigata, Kawasaki they have to turn up against Niigata, because would it be a shock if Niigata beat Kawasaki? I'm not 100% sure, but I think Niigata will definitely fancy their chances against this Frontale side. So both games on Saturday are pretty decent. And Sunday, Ooh, it's a little bit more of a test to find a great game, I'll be completely honest. But yeah, I'm not bigging this up really, am I, for the J League? So what will I go for? Oh, if in doubt, go Sapporo at home. It's going to be usually exciting with them. Hopefully they can be in really attacking mood like they were against Niigata and against F Marinos. That should be a really exciting game if both teams are at it. There is a fear that it comes a procession for Marinos if Sapporo aren't really at it. But at their best, Sapporo can beat anyone. So hopefully they put on a really good fight. And yeah, Sunday isn't a complete washout.
Yeah, no, good to see you. It's still true to form there, Sam. I was expecting you to pick that one on the Sunday. So, yeah, F. Marino's visiting the Sapporo Dome. Yeah, should be a terrifically entertaining game for several reasons. And, yes, Sapporo's defending might be one of them. I guess, well, on paper, the standout fixture from the match day is third hosting fourth. It's Kashima entertaining Fukuoka. Maybe two clubs that, well, not maybe, definitely two clubs that Sam and I didn't expect to see in the top four, I think, at any time this season. So the fact that they're both coming into this game, with the two victories to their name in this early season, it should be an interesting one for the punters up at the Kashima Soccer Stadium. Elsewhere, I guess, yeah, the pickings are fairly slim on Sunday, but we know that the J1 will always throw up a surprise result or two. And if the pattern from the first three match days holds, three draws as well. So, yes, the two games on Saturday and the other seven on Sunday. And, without fail, listeners, you know that Sam and I will be back to round them all up on next week's episode. So, mate, yeah, it was obviously great to catch up with Alan in part one and yourself throughout the remainder of the episode. And, looking forward to catching up with you again next week. Hopefully United don't lose a 7-0 again, so you'll be in a better mood next week.
Well, they better not. I'm at the next game against Real Betis. I don't want another. I've got to take the coach back from Manchester as well, so I don't want to be on the end of a 7-0 there. So, yeah, hopefully not. And we've got, before that, the return for the final time ever of the Levain Cup group stage. So, yeah, we'll get your fill of that while you can.
Yeah, bet you're licking your chops at the prospect of that, yes, in this midweek. And that might be obviously a reason why some of these J1 games are pushed back to Sunday next weekend. But, fair chance you won't get too much Levain Cup group stage match day one coverage on the next week's podcast, listeners. So, yeah, apologies in advance for that. Sam and I would like to thank Alan Gibson for joining us in part one of this week's episode. We'd like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support, in particular Tom Z, who came on over the course of the past week, and, of course, Daniel for his questions on the two Kansai Derby clubs back in part one. If you'd like to get involved for as little as $1 a month, please visit patreon.com/jtalkpod. And, of course, listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up J1 Match Day 4. Speak to you then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.